Christ Church started gathering for worship during the presidency of George Washington. The first presidential election that Christ Church prayed through was that of John Adams. The person that lost that election, Thomas Jefferson, was known to have attended Christ Church. In this constantly changing and often adversarial world in which we live, I find comfort in the fact that these walls are saturated with generations of prayer for our country and for our world. Christ Church existed long before any of us in this room arrived and will continue long after the last one of us departs. We are, of course, moving towards another presidential election. I don't need to tell you that there is profound pain and disconnect across our world at this moment. Something has been happening in recent years that is generation-defining. Conflict is touching our communities on every level, and not just because of differing political views. At our work, with our family and friends, here in our churches, we don't know what to say to people that we don't agree with. Whatever our position is, we tend to feel like a small, unheard minority. Although a certain amount of conflict is inevitable in life, when our relationships with one another become adversarial, when we begin to see one another as opponents rather than as children of God that belong to the same family, not only do we retreat further into like-minded silos, but we broaden the chasm between us. And we run the risk of dismissing and demeaning those who do not think in the same ways that we do. Every Sunday here at Christ Church, we come to immerse ourselves in the teachings of Jesus, whose values are very different than those of our world. I am so grateful that in our divisive, polarized, conflict-oriented culture, that places like Christ Church exist and invite all people to gather around the same table. Our world is in desperate need of places like this. Each of our lives are in desperate need of places like this. In this morning's gospel from John, we find some of Jesus' final words before he's killed. Jesus offers a prayer for his disciples. Now, because the author of John can be kind of long-winded, kind of meandering, I want to hone in on two key words that help me unpack what's going on here. The first is the word world, which in Greek is cosmos. And that can be translated in Greek in three ways. One, the cosmos can be the universe, everything God's created. Two, the cosmos can be the actual creatures and the plants and the inhabitants of this earth. And three, the cosmos can be how we human beings have ordered the world, our values, our politics, our social structures. It's this third definition that Jesus is leaning into. Jesus is saying that the way we have ordered things, the ways that we treat each other and exert power over each other, the things that we pretend are important, all of that, he's saying that the values of the world we've created are in opposition to the values of what he calls the Word. That phrase, the Word, is also a significant one in John's gospel. You might remember that every year on the first Sunday after Christmas, we read from John chapter 1. And it goes like this. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. That Greek word for word is logos. Jesus and the Logos, the Word, are one and the same. But you've got to love Greek for this. Logos can also mean more than just Jesus. Logos also means the case for something, or the foundation of something, or a story that gives meaning and purpose. So the Word is both Jesus and the story that Jesus is telling. And the Gospel of John is very clear that there's one story that Jesus tells. It's the story of love. Jesus is praying that God will watch out for and protect his disciples as they follow the story of love, because the story of love will be at odds with the ways of our world. Holy Father, Jesus prays, protect them in your name that you've given me, so that they may be one as we are one. I don't think Jesus had any illusion that the idea of a beloved community characterized by unity would be an easy sell, or that it would be an accomplishment that could be reached and maintained once and for all. We are thoroughly human, and even in our search for God, our journeys together will inevitably involve conflict. And yet, in the arc of his teaching, Jesus is very clear that our aim should be to love one another, rather than attack or oppose or be more right than one another. Part of what that means is that we can come down on two different places on any number of issues, but that we have a Christian responsibility to do so without devaluing or dismissing one another's humanity. It's easy to be cynical or critical. That doesn't require any energy from us. Jesus's vision is that we love one another, which begins by us showing up with vulnerability and trying our best to see each other. This past week, Winnie and I gathered with other clergy from around the Diocese of Washington for our annual clergy retreat out at the Claggett Center in Maryland. Our speaker was another Episcopal priest named Winnie. She was really good. And she recounted to us a story from the Mishnah, which is an ancient collection of Jewish oral traditions. And the story was about people making a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. These people would come from all over, and when they arrived at the temple, they would enter the temple courtyard, and then they would turn to the right. They would begin walking in a large circle in front of the temple as they gave thanks for everything and everyone in their life that had helped make this journey successful. However, those who arrived at the temple and were carrying something heavy on their heart, people who had experienced a loss, or they were carrying the weight of something heavy or painful, they would walk into the courtyard and they would turn to the left. And so imagine you have this churn of people in front of this temple moving to the right, and then you also have this other churn of people that are walking to the left. And as these circles would intertwine, and as these people would make eye contact with one another, those moving from the right would stop, and they would say to their fellow pilgrims, "What weight are you carrying?" And then those who were moving to the left and were carrying a burden, they would pause and they would share a bit of their story. The conversation would end with one saying to the other, "May God comfort you." You know, one day each of us will be that person who's moving to the right. And one day each of us will be that person who's moving to the left. I believe it's the act of being willing to pause our journeys long enough to hold each other's hearts, being willing to have truly heartfelt presence with one another, that is a first step towards transforming alienation, tribalization, conflict. If it's true that hurt people can hurt other people, And if it's true that if we don't transform our pain, then we can risk transmitting our pain, then there's a role that we can play for each other, to stop and look at each other. Even if just for a moment, look with empathy through each other's eyes, and then utter a version of the question that Ruby Sales once posed to each other: where does it hurt? And then see each other and be present with each other. I'm not naive enough to suggest that this will magically fix one another's pain or the issues between us or everything going wrong in the world. It won't. But it will help us treat each other better, which is not nothing. It's up to us to build the type of world and communities that we dream of and that we wish existed. I believe with all of my heart that spiritual communities like ours can not only model an alternative to the ways of the world, but can also be valuable sources of healing amidst significant conflict and division, both of the cultural and personal varieties. The center of our worship each and every Sunday is communion. We gather around this table behind me as young and old, male, female, non-binary, gay, straight, trans, Republican, Democrat, independent, wealthy and struggling, Black, white, Asian, Hispanic. And as we reach out our hands towards God, we're reminded that there is not one thing that separates any of us in God's eyes. This is God's table, not ours. And then as we stand around this altar offering our broken hearts, and as we pause and look at one another and hold one another closely and pray for God's comfort for one another, even if just for a second, what happens is that we grow together, not further apart. There is not a political rally or a club or a soccer team or a scout troop that does what it is that we're trying to do. People are desperate for this. It binds us. Here at Christ Church, this table has bound hearts for over 200 years. This table is the embodiment of common ground. Each of us is searching for a taste of wholeness in our broken lives that only God can provide. If we dared to carry what we find inside of these walls, outside of these walls, then our world would begin to feel like a different place. In the name of God, amen.